Welcome to part two of our conversation with John Kashuba about shapeshifters. Let's talk about some of the other things that you've come across in your book when it comes to shapeshifting. You had mentioned skinwalkers earlier. Can you talk about, let's introduce the audience to what a skinwalker is, and then tell me what you found.
Right. So skinwalkers are basically a Native American sort of phenomena, and it seems to me primarily in the Southwest, like among the Utes and the Diné people, the Navajo people. And the culture, the popular culture there, is that a skinwalker is essentially a shaman, again, Native American shaman who has the ability, however he gets it, he has the ability to transform himself into an animal. And it's generally a wolf or a coyote, something like that. The problem with the shapeshift, with the skinwalker, is that he is a really, really awful person. And his whole role, basically, is to kill. So frequently, somebody would invoke a skinwalker in some way to wreak vengeance on somebody or to get back at somebody. And once that's there, the skinwalker, this shaman, will transform and he'll go out and he'll kill people, you know, as asked, as requested. But it's interesting because the Southwest peoples really don't like to talk about the skinwalker at all, because they have this fear themselves that if they talk about it too much and, you know, sort of get the word out, that it may turn on them, that they may find themselves being a victim of a skinwalker. But there was an interesting thing, though, that that I came across, and there's a book by George Knapp and another guy, and I forgot who the other author is, called Skinwalker Ranch. And there's this there's a location out west in Utah that was an old ranch, and there's a lot of paranormal activity there of all kinds, including supposedly seeing these shape-shifting entities that appear to be like giant wolves, like wolves that are 7 or 8 feet tall and, you know, 400 pounds, big, big animals. But what the book says is that they believe that what we're looking at are either extraterrestrial aliens or entities from like another dimension entirely, so an alternate reality, coming through some kind of a wormhole, or, you know, kind of a cosmic hole, if you will, in reality, joining our reality with another's. And so that's what they're saying that these skinwalkers might be. And the Native people goes back with their stories about these for hundreds and hundreds of years. They've been saying them. So it's hard to say exactly what they are, but there are stories about them. There's incidents. You can read a lot of stories about Native Americans, or people even traveling through reservations in that area, driving alone at night and suddenly looking out their window and seeing like this giant wolf running alongside your truck, and you're doing 70 miles an hour and he's just loping along with you, no problem. And they're recognizing it as not being a regular wolf, but as something other. So that's basically what a skinwalker is, and that's the short of it.
Sure. When we're talking about skinwalkers, or we're talking about just pulling it all the way back just to the term shapeshifter, oftentimes we're talking about cultures that were prior to current day, as far as what their belief system of what can happen and is happening. What were you finding? What did you find in your research as far as more recent times? Are there any examples, I guess, in more modern times, even specifically in more modern societies, where people have accounted what does appear to be a shapeshifter?
Well, as I said, you know, some of the examples that I gave before of India and Africa, I mean, these are modern accounts. And there's been accounts in England from around 2004 of, you know, seeing what they considered to be a werewolf. One was reported seeing, they called him Old Striker. And I forgot what area of England it was, but they've been seeing this thing for a long time. One report in the newspaper was that a guy saw it actually run towards a fence as a man, and then sort of transform into an animal and leap over this 8-foot fence and then over a 30-foot irrigation canal or drainage canal. So, I mean, there's stories like that. If you're asking, are there cultures that, you know, still believe in shapeshifters, I would say that there certainly are among indigenous populations, but that belief is still very, very strong that there are people, shamans, wise people, whatever, that are capable of transforming. But I don't think, you know, for the rest of us, I think if you walk down any street in Main Street USA and asked if they, you know, they saw a shapeshifter recently, they'd probably look at you kind of funny.
A little awkward. Yeah.
Don't think so. Yeah. So, I mean, the belief is still there, and it's still very much in our culture. It's very much in our consciousness. The fact that there are so many movies, there are so many books, there are so many, you know, video games, you name it, about shapeshifters of all sorts. It's a very popular figure. And I think the reason for that is because we find the shapeshifter character attractive. I mean, what if you could throw off all the bonds that sort of keep you in place, all the moral bonds you have, the legal bonds, the religious bonds, the social bonds, all those that say you have to act and behave in a certain way? What if you can throw those all off and go absolutely crazy? Just go wild. Do whatever you want. You run around naked in the jungle and howl at the moon, right? That's what the shapeshifter offers. It offers that escape for people. So I think that a lot of people take sort of vicarious pleasure in the idea of the shapeshifter. Why do we wear costumes at Halloween? We put on a whole new persona. We become shapeshifters at Halloween and masquerade balls, right? I mean, what's that about? What's cosplay about when millions and millions of people worldwide dress up and pretend to be something else? I think it's because, again, it allows you to step outside yourself for a while and sort of deal with the world as an alternate person, as an alternative personality. And I think that's what the shapeshifter figure in all cultures offers. And I think that's why it's still so attractive.
Are there certain times in history, you believe, looking back on this, where the rough concept of shapeshifting rises in popularity because of what is going on in the world?
You know, that's an interesting question. I don't know about that. I know that I've seen that in looking at things like seances. You know, they came out of, they started pretty much in growing popularity after the Civil War with all the dead, and grew in popularity during World War I when people were trying to contact the dead from their dead relatives. But I don't know that I've seen that with shapeshifters so much. I don't know. I would like to look at that myself and see. I'm not aware of it offhand, but
it's almost a form. I mean, when we're talking about the like cosplay and things of that nature, obviously in the last handful of years we've seen a giant spike in things of that, where it's socially acceptable to do some of those things, to go to a convention and then walk around in public, in some, you know, bizarre, what one would only expect out of the mascot of a basketball team, to be just wandering around the park. You know, it's a form of escapism. And that's what I wonder about, you know, where you say it offers that, almost that hope, if you will, for some, where it's, well, if it's possible for someone to turn into a wolf, I guess that the closest I can get is to identify as a unicorn princess, then maybe that's as far as I'm going to get. But it makes you wonder a little bit about how that may spike and how the belief and how the interest in general may kind of come and go based on where society is at the time.
Yeah. You make a good point with cosplay, though, because that is a fairly recent phenomena. I mean, that's only been the last, maybe decade or so.
Yeah.
That it's grown in huge popularity. And when you think about the world today, it's, you know, it's pretty messed up. Not that it hasn't been messed up in the past either, but, you know, maybe people are looking for an outlet to deal with stress and anxiety or whatever it might be, and that might be the way to do it.
Yeah, it makes you wonder. What's your take on the cryptoid angle of things? Things like Mothman and Bigfoot, Yetis, all of that. We're seeing a surge right now in some areas of the country of sightings of what people are describing as the Mothman. Specifically, you're probably aware of that up around the Great Lakes, specifically around Lake Michigan right now. Is that something that falls into the category of a shapeshifter from what you understand, or is that its whole other own ecosystem?
I think it's a whole different thing. You know, there are certainly cryptids from Bigfoot right up to Mothman, like you mentioned. You know, we have, Ohio has something called the Ohio Grassman, which is sort of similar to Bigfoot. You have Dogmen, you have Mothman, you have all this kind of stuff.
Sure.
To me, when I'm talking about a shapeshifter, I'm talking about a creature that is capable of making a transformation.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't know that any of the reports that I've, at least that I've heard from some of these other sort of cryptoids, indicates that they change shape at all. Now, that may be, I might not be aware of that, but from what I've read, it seems like they are what they are. You know, we don't know that.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, that's what I wonder with that is these sightings of these things, if people don't know what they are. I guess more specifically, what I'm thinking of is the Mothman phenomena. There's some very bizarre pictures that have been coming out of that phenomena. Is, well, could this be somehow tied into shape-shifting, where, you know, was this related to a living person that somehow has done the shape-shifting transformation, and then this is kind of the after effect, and you're witnessing this, and then they're gone. But it's obviously, it's a bizarre thing that people are talking about and claiming to see. What for you, when you look back on your research on the book, personally, was the most chilling story that you came across in terms of shape-shifters? What did you walk away from going, okay, well, that one really did kind of freak me out more than anything?
Well, I think you know, the African one was kind of very bizarre. It's just, you know, hard to understand, the one that I mentioned. But I think, again, going back to some of these accounts that I studied, where people acted out that way and became violent, vicious, you know, killers, and doing horrific things. I mean, there was a case where this, you know, one guy was back in, I guess, maybe the 18th century, murdered three people at one time. One woman was pregnant. He took the fetus out, ate the fetus. I mean, you know, just horrible, horrible stuff. And when I thought about that, what struck me more than anything was that I didn't believe that that was a wolf, that he had actually transformed into a wolf. I believed that it was a person who thought he was acting out. Mm-hmm. And I guess the scariest thing, if you want to call it that, is, for me, the possibility that people can be turned, if you will, in a way, to become something that violent and that dangerous mentally, you know. And so I even started thinking about people like Ted Bundy, for instance, you know, who was by all means not a shapeshifter. But then I think, well, wait a minute, maybe he was, in the sense that when people talk about Ted Bundy, and I'm sure your audience knows, this was this, you know, serial killer, sure, rapist, everything else. But everybody talked about him as being this clean-cut young guy, college-looking, you know, button-down shirt, very polite, and all that kind of stuff. And yet he was capable of doing all this horrific stuff. So how does he go from that one image of being Mr. Clean, in a way, the all-American boy, to this horrible, horrible person? I mean, isn't that shape-shifting? You know, people say, well, yeah, mentally he's crazy. Yeah, I know, but that's sort of my point, is that if you can believe you are something else and make that transformation, that's a scary thing to think that can happen, that people are, well, I don't want to say capable. I think they're probably incapable, because they probably don't want it to happen, but it does happen. And that, to me, would be a scary shape-shifter. That's enough.
Yeah, I think it's sometimes when we think of shape-shifting, we think of external. We think of viewing it from the audience standpoint, and I'm watching this person turn into this. But in reality, shape-shifting is probably much more of an internal thing of how one is viewing themselves and what they're capable of doing and what their limitations are with society.
Right. And in fact, in my book, I even use those two terms. I talk about external and internal shape-shifters. To differentiate between the two, you know, because there is a difference.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with John Kishuba about shapeshifters. Be sure to check out John's latest book about shapeshifters, entitled Shapeshifters. Search it on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.